Welcome to Idle Chatter, brought to you by the Machinery Digest, where steel and soil meet. A weekly podcast by a New Jersey farmer to all farmers and ranchers across this great nation. And yes, there are farms in New Jersey. Regardless of the crop you grow or the livestock you raise, we all have one thing in common. Agriculture runs on passion, sweat, tears, and machinery. And that is why the Machinery Digest exists. A no-nonsense, grease-under-your-fingernails educational website. It was created to provide a transfer of knowledge so that you can maintain, service, and most importantly, understand today's complex farm equipment. My name is Ray Bohax, and I farm too. It is time now to get under the sheet metal. Hello and welcome to Idle Chatter. I'm Ray Bohax, the Hot Rod Farmer, and I'm coming to you once again from Hackettstown, New Jersey. And yes, as I always like to say, there are farms in New Jersey, but there's not that much farming going on this year. Sadly, as it is in so many parts of the country, the weather has not been that agreeable. And our place, just like in last week's show I told you, it's been like the Keystone Cops this planting season. I put my fifth planting in. I guess you just got to laugh, right? My fifth planting in on Sunday after church. And I had that, that was the first planting in a field that I just killed off the cover crop where I broke my sprayer in. So this field has been a challenge in every way, shape, or form. So since the sprayer was broken, what I decided to do was just mow down the cover crop because I knew that it was going to get too high and I wouldn't be able to burn it off. So I mowed it, and then when I fixed the sprayer, I hit it with the glyphosate. So that, you know, I just have to stop for a second. I don't even know why I hesitated to say that word, because this media today has you so paranoid about saying Roundup or glyphosate. So I'm going to say it, glyphosate, okay? I'm saying it real loud, glyphosate, because it's just amazing how they've gotten everybody so paranoid. But anyway, so what happened was that I had a lot of, well, it looked almost like a hay field, right? There was a lot of windrows of how I mowed it, even though I didn't windrow it, but the down crop. And since I was anxious to try to get a planting in, because the weather was going to rain the next day, that I went in the field with trepidation, and the first six or seven or eight passes, it planted beautifully. I could see my row markers. It was going in the ground beautifully, and then I got a little bit further out into the field, and I knew that the matting of the mowed cover crop was a little bit thicker there, just for a number of reasons. That area of the field got more sun. I started near the hedgerow, and I also seemed to, for some reason in the mix, I had more hairy vetch there, which grew quite tall. So anyway, once I got into that, I started to not be able to see my row markers, and then I messed up those rows. It looked like I was drunk. Thank God that you really can't see that from the highway. But I hate that, and as I know we all do. And then it looks like the planter was not doing a good job putting the seed in the ground. I don't think it wasn't going as deep as I had. It wasn't going 2 inches. It was probably going more an inch to inch and a half when I could glean that. And I guess maybe it hairpinned some, so it hairpinned more than some. But so I decided to stop. And I decided to stop and just give it to God. And I'll call that my fifth planting out of hopefully 10. But the clock is ticking, tick, 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 tick. And today is already June 11th or 12th. So if I can't get everything in by the end of June, I got to just abort that and get whatever I can in. So, hey, what are you going to do? We give it to God. And these times are humbling. They're frustrating. But I know that my burdens here are nothing compared to the people that are having extreme flooding in fields underwater and combines washing away. So there is nothing for me to complain about. You know, usually this time of year we're talking about how the crops are doing, how the corn is doing, what stage it's in. You know, we're scouting for bugs, we're scouting for disease, and I'm scouting for seed to put in the ground. So as I said to my wife, I said, well, it's going somewhere. I don't know where. It's not laying on the top of the soil, so it's putting in some place, but I don't think it's where it's supposed to be. So who knows? We'll see what happens. Well, hopefully things are going better on your farm, and if they are a struggle also, well, just keep having faith, and it will all work out in the end. Then this too shall pass. You know, I guess at one particular point, you become at peace with things, and you just give it to God, and you say, whatever, it's like the elevator dropping. You drop to the last floor, they can't drop anymore. So, you know, I just say to myself, hey, I'll just do whatever I could do. The corn is very slow emerging on my operation. We've had very digital weather. Actually, over the weekend, we had beautiful, beautiful days, and we had about 20 heat units. But then the next day it gets down to 48 degrees, 42 degrees. So I know empirically I'm not a plant biologist or a physiologist or a agronomist or any of those ists. But I just know from life's experience that the corn, like most things in life, doesn't like to be short-cycled or duty-cycled. It doesn't like to have nice warm weather and then cold weather and grow and stop growing, whatever. But hey, we'll see what happens. I'll let you know in August. But today's show, I'm going to discuss a topic that may not be familiar to many of you. And it is called NVH, which is noise, vibration, and harshness, which is not to be confused with a show I did months back called NIH, which is not invented here. Not invented here means you didn't think of it, so it's not good. And you spend more time convincing everybody and arguing that it's not good for no particular reason. And a lot of farmers do that, but specifically a lot of engineers do that. They didn't think of it, so they poo-poo it, right? And hopefully you guys that are listening to Idle Chatter don't do that. Say, I'm not listening to that hot rod farmer. I'll listen to him. I'm not going to do anything he says. So, you know, I really don't want that. I want you to obviously listen, but I want you to also apply the things that I'm telling you about, because they're all based in science and in facts and in good mechanical procedure. So there's no reason to not apply it. But that's NIH, not invented here. We're going to be talking about NVH today, which is noise, vibration, and harshness, as I said. And within the engineering community, there is actually, I don't want to call it a discipline of study, but it really could be, as far as NVH is concerned. And depending upon the piece of equipment and what it does, whether it's an engine or whether it's something that rotates at a relatively high speed of RPM, then you will apply NVH to it, a study of NVH, noise, vibration, and harshness. If you're designing a window crank for a window, then you're really not going to be concerned so much with NVH. But if you're designing a hydraulic pump, if you're designing an engine, a transmission, a wheel bearing, a rotor in a combine, a turbocharger, or anything with a good degree of velocity to it, or revolutions per minute, I should say, not velocity, then NVH becomes a real critical element. And your NVH is a qualifier of many different things. It is a qualifier to you, the consumer, for the quality of the piece of machinery or that particular apparatus, because a low level of noise, vibration, and what we term as harshness, and I'll get into that as the show goes on, harshness is almost without exception a metric that can be used, a standard that could be used to identify how well the piece is designed and how well the piece is made. And we need to separate those two, because you could have something that's designed poorly. And let's say you have a hydraulic pump, and the pump itself is designed poorly, and there's a lot of lateral load on the one bearing, and that bearing ultimately becomes prone to failure. But the person who is assembling could do a beautiful job. So they don't really come hand in hand. Or it could be an excellent design, whereas the using that same thing, that bearing load is very even, and it's not being stressed, so it lasts a long time. But the person assembling it, or the procedure to assemble it, or the machine, or what have you, is quite poor. And it's put together cockeyed with half the bolts loose, and then it fails. So, and I've spoken about this in shows before, is that you really have to identify when you look at something and it doesn't work properly. Not so much on our level as far as being the consumer, but on the engineering level, you have to look at it and say, was it a good technology with a poor execution, or was it a poor technology? So for instance, that I always use the same story, that if a wheel falls off a car because the lug nuts were not tightened and the wheel comes flying off, well, it's not the technology, the theory of holding on a wheel to a hub with lug nuts that is faulted. It's the person who was working on it didn't tighten it. So the technology was sound and the execution was poor. And then the converse of that is if you tried to hold the wheel on with duct tape in lieu of lug nuts and studs, then you went 3 feet and the wheel fell off, then you'd say, well, the technology, the idea of using duct tape to hold the wheel on, is not sound. But even though you did a good execution and put the duct tape on very smoothly and evenly. So you always have to balance those out. And on our level, when we're talking about NVH, I like to use NVH, like I said, as a qualifier, as a metric for how well a machine is made, or an engine is put together, or designed, or what have you. And but like most things in life, you know, you can't always judge a book by its cover. You could have a piece of equipment that has a high level of NVH, and it could end up serving you very well. But NVH is like a cancer. It's like it usually kills things. And it's probably, with rare exception, would you have a very, very high level of NVH and then have a piece of equipment, a machine, engine, what have you, that has an extremely long service life and proper performance because of proper performance with dealing with all of those harmonics. So what it really gets down to is the idea of understanding, and that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about today, we're going to introduce the three elements: noise, which is audible, vibration, which is tactile, and harshness, which really is a audible and partially tactile, tactile criteria, we'll say, for lack of better terms. I couldn't think of a proper word. But you know, the idea of understanding this is not only going to make you a better farmer, because there's a diagnostic component to this as you start to operate a piece of machinery and it gets older or gets some hours on it, but there's also an educational component, because you may be going to buy something, and whatever it may be, let's say arguably you're a dairy farmer and you are buying a big fan for the dairy barn to have some air to keep the cows cool in the summertime. And you have brand A and brand B. And you plug in, you're in the supply house, the store, whatever, and you plug in brand A. Then, yeah, it moves the air, and it has a lot of noise to it. It could have a lot of NVH, it could have a lot of noise, it could have a lot of vibration, it could have harshness to it. And then you plug in brand B and the fan is much quieter, it's much smoother, and has none of the negative effects of the brand A, which is cheaper. Then there's probably a very good possibility that brand B, the one that has less NVH, would be a better value for you, even though most likely it is probably more expensive, because it costs money to to decrease NVH. There's some free decreases in NVH, but usually it costs money, meaning better bearings, the stiffer housing, maybe a fan blade in that particular instance that has more engineering in it, so it doesn't cause so much choppiness in the air. And it could have a better shell to it, a better case to it, what have you. So historically, NVH costs money to eliminate, but that money is a return on your investment. It's an indirect return on your investment because that fan would last longer and operate better. And also the component, for instance, like with a dairy barn, is that if you have a fan that is quieter and it's going to be running at night for when the cows are sleeping, then you know there's a tangible benefit there, that the thing is not roaring and making noise and the screen is vibrating. And we all know that, you know, with cows, like with any animal, we need to respect them and honor them because they're God's creation. But as far as their milk production is concerned, we also know that a happy cow, a cow that sleeps well, a cow that's content, is always going to produce more milk. Just like a happy crop, right? The happy crop is going to produce a higher yield. So it's an idea of understanding this and applying it to your purchases and to your diagnostics. And, you know, I think that one of the greatest things in life is to understand what you work with. And you can understand it at different levels. You'll need to write a thesis on it, or as I always say, to design it, but you need to have more than a cursory knowledge of something. And that's what I want to just take a minute or so and tell you about the Agro Expo. And that's going to be held August 13th and 14th in St. John's, Michigan. And as I've said before in the past few weeks on this show, is that I'm really excited about this event. And it's a relatively new event that may be 4 or 5 years old, and it grows exponentially every year, both in participants as far as and exhibitors, and as far as attendance is concerned. But this is an educational event, and it's there to teach you. It's there to teach you how to be a better farmer. It's there to teach you about fertility. And one of the things that I really, really am looking forward to really gravitated to, one of many things that are going there, is that they're going to have an FFA crop management challenge. And there's going to be 8 Michigan FFA chapters that are going to plant corn plots at this site, in the Agro Expo site, and they're going to manage them throughout the season. And they were going to compete on 3 levels. And this is the point that I'm getting to, is that 35% of the final score is going to be on yield, right? We all talk about yield. That's important thing. Nobody's denying that, just like horsepower and engine, right? That's what gets the work done, the yield. But the other two areas are the economics of what they needed to do to create their yield, whether it's a winning yield or not. And the third thing that I really like is, and I think is quite unique, and it's the presentation and response to the judges' questions. And that's 30% of the final score. So basically, in essence, if you were to look at this, and if you were to say, well, 35% of the score is yield, 35% of the score is economics, and then about 30% of the balance of the final score is how the FFA student answers the questions that are posed by the judges, to me is really the biggest take-home message there. Because in anything in life, if you want to learn it, if you want to really become intimate with it, you have to be able to explain it succinctly with a minimal amount of words to someone that you are talking to and asking you a question about it. And the idea that you need to think through that process to formulate your sentences and to formulate the answer in an accurate way without babbling like I do is a wonderful educational tool. And anybody in any type of education, doesn't have to be farming, agriculture, machinery, agronomy, could be anything. If you want to truly bring your knowledge to a higher level, explain whatever it is to someone, because if you have to explain it, you have to teach it, you will be surprised how you will be forced in your mind to further analyze it and to be able to get into better harmony with it yourself. So, and that is in essence why I'm so excited about that aspect of the Agro Expo, because you will take these students, these FFA students, and whatever the judges are going to ask them, I'm not privy to that, but it's going to force them to be able to explain that. And even if they lose the contest, they get one bushel per acre, that is something that they will be able to take with them for the rest of their life and their career. And that is something also I want to convey to you, my audience, is that if you listen to this show and you learn something from it, if you further want to cement that, explain that to somebody else. Say, hey man, I listened to this guy from New Jersey, who's a hot rod farmer, and he explained to me about NVH, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about what NVH is. And that will take your education and take your knowledge, and it will engrave it in your mind, and you'll be able to use that for the rest of your, not only your career, for the rest of your life, whatever it may be. So listen, the Agro Expo in Michigan, St. John's, Michigan, not far from Lansing, used to be Oldsmobile country. Sadly, Oldsmobile doesn't exist anymore, but it's free. It's a two-day event. And you got to be there, and you got to, it's an educational event, it's not a party, so hopefully you get a chance to check it out, the Agro Expo. You could go on their website and find out more. But getting back with our subject matter today, is that I've always been a person, even as a young boy getting involved with machinery and engines and anything, I was always anything mechanical was a magnet to me as a young boy and still is today. It is not, you know, it's funny how, and I may have said this in the past in the show, but I really have not changed as I've gotten older. I guess whatever faults I had years ago, I still have, and the things that I like and gravitated to and love, I still love. I haven't really changed. My taste in food has changed. I eat salad now, which I really didn't care for when I was a kid, and believe it or not, I love peas. But the core of who I am, love my nation, love God, love animals, love machinery, want to be the best person I could be. That really has not changed. And I'm not tooting my own horn. I'm just saying that has not changed. And I always was very interested in anything mechanical, and I like to study it and I like to look at it. And what that allowed to happen in my life, just because God made me that way, it's not to my credit, it's to His credit, made me that way. It gave me exposure to a lot of things at a young age that most kids didn't have, or as a young man didn't have. Because I'd be able to go and say, man, that thing really sounds sweet, or that doesn't sound so good, and they normally don't sound that way, or they're normally not that loud, or they're normally not that quiet, there must be something going on. And then what you do is you then try to answer that question, well, why is this engine of the same make and model quieter than the one that's sitting next to it? And that causes you to go on a quest to figure that out. And sometimes you may figure that out in 5 minutes, and sometimes you may figure it out in 5 years. And what I basically do in my particular life, and it's worked very well for me, and like I said, I'm saying this all humbly, is that, you know, I'm not saying I'm going to make my life mission upon that, and you know, and the hell with everything else, I'm going to find out why this 6.7 liter power stroke was quieter than the other one next to it. But the thing is that those unanswered questions I put in the back of my mind, that when opportunity comes, and often opportunity comes many years or many months down the road and in an oddball way, and then you say, man, now I understand why that engine was quieter than the one next to it, or that combine header ran smoother than the one than the same one that my neighbor has. And that's really what I want you to get away from, get away from it, right? Click off and just forget about it, hang up and go to some other podcast. But I want you to go on this quest, and I want you to recognize NVH in your machinery. And, you know, for many years now, I go to a TA truck stop in the morning for coffee. and I like to get my coffee and I walk around. I love looking at the trucks. I love looking at the loads. And I walk around and I spend about an hour or so and go for a little, maybe a two-mile walk or 2.5 mile walk. It's around the lot a couple of times. I think it's just about 2 miles if I go three times, what have you. But you know, what I particularly like to do is if a truck is running, and it could be a semi with a cat, with a big cat in it, or Detroit or what have you, or it could be a pickup truck with a diesel in it or what have you, or gasoline motor, usually not too much gasoline, but mostly compression ignition diesel engines. And you'll come to see that every family of engines has its own voice pattern. And that's the noise of noise, vibration, and harshness. And it's got its own voice pattern. And you could tell, I mean, with your eyes closed, you can, and I'm sure a lot of you could do the same thing. You could tell, like a B-Series Cummins. I'm using a pickup truck analogy. B-Series Cummins sounds right different at idle. And then a Duramax or a Ford Powerstroke. And in a bigger truck, a Mercedes sounds different than a cat. And a cat usually sounds a little bit different than a Cummins. And there's that tonation in it, and it's the frequency of its sound. It's NVH, noise, vibration, and harshness, that gives it a voice print. Just like you could put on the radio, and you could hear somebody singing halfway through the song, and you just turn the radio on, and you go, man, that's this singer, or that's that singer, because you recognize their voice. And, you know, the funny part about it is that, talking about voice, is that I guess my voice, being a New Jersey farmer, is quite unique within the community, because I've gone places. I'm not saying this happens every day, but people have recognized my voice from the Successful Farming TV show. They don't recognize my face, but they recognize my voice. So anyway, so an engine, a piece of machinery, whether it's a hydraulic pump, whether it's a engine, whether it's a combine header, whether it's a fan in a dairy barn, whether it's a seed meter, or even a sprayer, the sound of a sprayer working, the fluid going through its lines and at the spray tips, will give a voice print. And that's the N of NVH, noise, vibration, and harshness. But getting back to the truck stop, is that I love to go and listen to the sound of the engines. And then when I do have that opportunity, and you will hear the same series engine that's maybe in one truck sound different, have the same tonation to it, like I said, the same voice print, but it'll be at a lower decibel, or its frequency will be different, and then it'll cause you to say, well, why is this one different? Why is this one quieter? Why does this one have a different sound pattern, not only in decibels, but in sones? So, and you know, what really amazes me is that specifically in these light-duty pickup trucks. I mean, I walked by the other day. There was a guy, he was had a new Super Duty Ford. Looked like it was a 2018 or 2019 Super Duty with the 6.7-liter power stroke. And that is one sweet sound an engine. And what I mean by sweet sounding engine is that, you know, you have to look at what the purpose of the piece of equipment is for. I mean, so in this particular point, the engine. And what I mean by, you know, a lot of guys think noise is sweet. Yeah, well, I mean, in my soundtrack, the opening to my podcast, I got a Top Fuel, I'm making a run. I mean, and that's a sweet sound in a different way. But being a production engine, the power stroke, and the Duramax also, but the power stroke now is quieter, and quieter than the Cummins by sure, different sound, is so quiet that actually oftentimes the belt drive makes more of a noise than the injectors, the piezo injectors. And you know, to me, that's really an accomplishment, because if you could get a controlled combustion event, or control a combustion event, manage it so highly that you have such a smooth burn in that cylinder, expansion of the flame, then that's really something that you need to that I need to tilt my hat to the engineer who did that. And you know, on the flip side of this, so let's say you have one of those trucks or whatever it may be, and you say, man, this thing was really, really quiet when it was new, and I now that I have 40, 50,000 miles on it, the sound of the engine is not the same. And that's going to be a telltale for something that is happening. It may not be catastrophic. It may be just carbon deposits, as we spoke about in last week's show, in the engine, or it may be in the particular, like in a diesel, could be a low cetane fuel or what have you, or something, or dirty injector where it's not atomizing the fuel properly and you're not getting that same smooth combustion event. But it's important for you to understand this aspect of it. So I use that when I walk around to know what, you know, if you don't know what sounds really good, you don't know what sounds really bad. And if you don't expose yourself to it, you'll never know. And what I want you to take away from this today is that it is imperative for you to apply the metric of NVH with all of your equipment. And it may be something where you listen. It may be tactile, where you touch something, for instance, like an alternator or a hydraulic pump, and you put your hand on and get to know its feel, how much harmonics it does, how much vibration it has, and also its harshness. And as I said, we will get into that as the show goes on. So what do I suggest you do? Well, the first thing I suggest for you to do is to get familiar with it by going out and listening, running, and letting it run and touch it. I don't care what piece of equipment this be. It could be a combine. So let's take a combine, for example, right? We don't even have the seed in the ground yet, and I'm worried about a combine. So you're gonna take the combine, and you know, this could be a spray, it could be anything, right? It could be a truck, it could be your wife's car, it could be an irrigation pump, what have you. So let's take the combine. And the combine, you want to listen to the engine. You want to listen and feel to the hydraulic system. You want to listen and feel whether it's got a chain drive or what have you. You want to listen and you want to feel, obviously not going to stick your hand in a chain, but you want to listen and feel to the header. And I want you to become familiar with the way it sounds, the way it feels. Because you've already owned this, so this is not a purchase decision, all right? But as I said, is that when something starts to change, that means a flag needs to go up and you need to start to investigate that. And one of the things about machinery on the farm is to be able to catch a problem before it becomes out of control and becomes a hard failure. It's much better in life to be able to fix something and deal with something under your timetable instead of the machine's timetable. So, for instance, all right, and that's why I like fluid analysis so much, because there are things that can start to fail and you may not be able to hear them or feel them, or you may never hear them and feel them. If you're running a combine with a header, you're never going to hear a bearing going bad and an alternator or a hydraulic pump probably starting to fail, right? So this is not a cure-all for everything, but fluid analysis is basically another tool in your toolbox, along with the tactile feel and the audible sound of listening. All right, so with a combine or any piece of equipment, you want to break it down into categories. You want to break it down into the engine, and then you want to be able to break the engine down into subsystems. How does the valve train sound? You don't want to just put the whole engine together. Yes, collectively you'd listen to it and feel it. How does the valve train sound? If possible, how does the alternator sound? You could put your hand on it. Does it have a harshness that it wasn't there before? If it has a hydraulic pump, if it has a compressor, an air compressor on it, or what have you, you break it down and you get to know its feel and its sound. And then you could say, okay, well, now how does the hydrostatic drive feel? Does it, well, you may not be able to feel that, but you could listen to it. Geez, does it seem at this RPM to make a little bit different sound than it did before? What have you? How does it engage? Does it engage nicely? Does it engage smoothly? You cannot just be oblivious to things, because, you know, things talk to you. Mechanical things talk to you, just like a crop talks to you in a field. If you see yellowing in the leaves, if you see certain things happening, you see spots, you see the leaves crinkling up on corn, you know it's a boron deficiency. It's going to talk to you. But like I've always said, is just like when you see it in a crop, it's usually too late for you to save it. this year, but you need to be able to learn from that. And the same thing's, but with a machine, it's a lot more forgiving than a crop. If you start to say, man, you know, that alternator's feeling a little bit rough, that doesn't mean you stop doing, you know, stop planting right now. Let's go get an alternator and put it on there. But you need to be able to go, and you need to be able to look at it and say, well, you know, once I get done with planting, I'm gonna examine that alternator a little bit more. Now, a very good tool for you to invest in, you could go from $10 to probably $200 or to $2,000 or $5,000. You don't need the $2,000 or $5,000 tool. That's on the engineering level. And what you want on a $10 level, you get a mechanic stethoscope. All right? You could buy one in the auto parts store and the farm supply store, the tractor implement dealer, usually they have them for about $10, and you get a mechanic stethoscope and you get familiar with using that and listening to different things. If you want to go a little bit more high tech, there's a tool, it's called I think the brand is Chassis Ears, and it's an electronic listening device, and they're only about $150 to $200. They're not very expensive, and this will allow you to attach things. They have a wireless one, which is quite nice, because what you could do is you could attach that to something, let's say a hydraulic pump or a hydraulic motor, and then you could operate that piece of equipment safely, or for, let's say it's a sprayer or a combine, it's running, its drive mechanism is off of a hydraulic motor, you could attach these chassis ears to it, and you could drive the unit, and then you could listen and see what's happening and say, man, this motor sounds different than the right front wheel, and then the left front wheel sounds very noisy and very harsh. And there are also tools that you could identify a frequency or harmonic, but they get to be in the 4-digit range instead of the low $100-$200 range. And you know, apply this to everything, but the mechanic stethoscope is such a simple thing, and it could be used in so many different applications. And then the other tool would be the chassis ears type of tool. If you go onto my website, farmmachinerydigest.com, and look at my archives for my Christmas gift buying guide, and that's also that same show is on the networks that host me, which is Fran, the Global Ag Network, and Ag Daily. Listen to that Christmas show, and I talk about those chassis ears in there. So what I want you to do is, and you're going to think that I'm crazy, all right? So I'm accepting the fact that you think that I'm crazy. But if you were to look at what a high-yield farmer does, what a high-yield farmer does is he pays attention to detail. And you know, he pays attention to the emergence, did all of the crop emerge at the same time or almost at the same time within a few hours or whatever. Everybody has a different window of acceptance. Some guys say they should jump up out of the ground at the same time. I personally don't believe that. I've never really seen that on my farm. I don't want to see 3 days worth of difference, but I'm not going to be concerned with 6 or 7 hours worth of difference. But that, you know, whatever. But I'm not a high yield guy. And but if I do have 3 days worth of difference in emergence, then I need to know that there's something going on. Either my planter is not set right and my depth is varying, or my seed firmer is not working correctly, or I'm not opening that trench properly or closing it properly, what have you. So I need to pay attention to that. All right. But if you look at the high yield guys, they pay a lot of attention to detail. And the same thing with anything. You look at a racing team, they pay attention to detail. You look at the best musicians, they pay attention to detail. And the thing is that what I want you to do, and this was leading to where I said you'll think that I'm crazy, is that when you have the opportunity, apply an NVH analysis to your equipment. So in other words, when the opportunity arises, listen to the engine with the mechanic stethoscope. Listen to by the valve cover for the valve train. Listen by the alternator. You have a sprayer, and you have the pump is going, and you have it parked, and you put the pump in. Listen to the pump. Listen to also listen and feel, for instance, on a sprayer, because that's hydraulics. And I'm not talking about the height. I'm talking about the hydraulic pump, but I'm also talking about the pump that moves the liquid product, the fertilizer or the pesticide from the tank through the lines. Listen to that pump. Feel it. I was on a farm who I will not mention, and they had a planter. They had a planter, and they were running an alternator into I think it was the alternator. It was running an alternator and what have you. And this alternator had a bad high harmonic in it. I said to him, "Look at that alternator. Whatever. Don't worry about that." I said, "Yeah, worry about that, because this alternator's got such a harmonic in it. You have to look what's going on here." And what they basically did is, when somebody worked on it at one particular point, they left the third bracket off the alternator. And then ultimately what will happen is that you'll be in the field running that alternator on the planter, big unit, right, with its own alternator, and you'll snap that ear off the case of the actual housing of the alternator, which is very common. It's very common with Delco alternators, especially on Chevrolet engines, because there'd be a third bracket, and that triangulation of the third bracket is what controlled that harmonic and didn't allow it to happen. That vibration, a harmonic is a vibration, and a lot of times that bracket was a pain in the neck to put on, and people say, "How the hell would it? I got the two brackets here. Where is it going to go?" Well, that third bracket was a vibration. That's what basically was happening to this planter, and they left off the third bracket, and this alternator had a harmonic in it, and it was going ready to break the ear off. And once it breaks the ear off, you're losing that alternator. Anything that breaks when it's at high RPM is usually quite ugly. I mean, so the alternator is going to, you know, God knows what's going to happen. That's going to fall off, or the belt is going to, the hydraulic lines to it, or whatever. It's not going to be, the belt is going to fly off. It's not going to be pretty. So familiarize yourself. Listen, you don't have to do this every day, but get to know what stuff sounds like, what it feels like. And if you have something that has multiple things, let's say you have a planter and you have obviously multiple row units, and let's say you have an electric seed meter, using that as an example, because you could run those obviously without planting in the field. The ground driven one would be hard to do. And so you could go and say, "Man, your row five, rows, you know, one through six, one through five sound great, but the sixth row, the seed meter sounds different." And so you need to pay attention. Also, on getting back to the sprayer, because I'm jumping around here and I apologize for that, but also on your sprayer, listen with the stethoscope, the mechanic stethoscope, and feel with your hands, as I started to say before, and I got on the sidetrack, is that, you know, have water in the sprayer and turn it on and let it spray, and then go the lines, whether it's a metal line or a rubber line, whatever your sprayer has to have or happens to have, listen to the fluid coursing through that line, because that fluid coursing through that line, and I'm talking about the fluid meaning the water, not the hydraulic fluid running the sprayer, but pumping out the product, fertilizer, pesticide, what have you, listen to it, because it's going to talk to you, and you'll get to say, "Well, maybe, geez, you know, at the end of the run, this sprayer, it's got a 40-foot boom, 50-foot boom, you got a 100-foot boom, right? You got a 100-foot boom, some of these big units, 60 feet on each side, 120-foot boom, right? Listen to how it feels. Feel it, listen to it, because that's going to give an indication of the hydraulic dynamics that are happening in that line. And you may be having a spray tip at the end of the line that is not getting, that visually you cannot see the flow rate from it being different or the pattern being that much different, but you may be having a feed problem in that line, all right? Not too common, but, you know, life is built upon failures that are not too common that sideline our profitability and sideline our crop. So listen to that. Get to know the feel of it. Get to know the sound of a transmission. Get to know the sound of a a PTO. If you're running a piece of equipment off a PTO and there's a bearing in there, there's a drive shaft, a CV joint, what have you, obviously you can't grab that and feel that. But you know, you have to apply some common sense to this. But there's nothing more important than recognizing something. You may not understand what is happening, but you're recognizing that something is happening. And that's the first thing, as with recognizing a deficiency in a crop, recognizing a deficiency in a machine. So now let's carry this to the H, which is the noise, vibration, and harshness. And you know, out of the two, the N and the V, They're not subjective. They're quantitative. You could identify an engineer. You could identify a frequency for its vibration. You could identify a sound level in either decibels or in sones for its noise. But the harshness really can be partially subjective. There is a metric that you could use to bring that together, but it is just like you could say someone's voice sounds harsh or it sounds raspy. It's not something often that you could put a real number on, but it's usually a combination of the noise and the vibration, and then going from there and creating this harshness. So you could have something that's very smooth, you could have something that doesn't have any vibration, and it could have a low decibel of noise, but it could also for some reason create a harshness. And sometimes this harshness is due to a number of other dynamics. So when you're engineering something, you're looking to actually minimize all three of those components. And historically, if you minimize the N and the V, the noise and the vibration, in most instances the harshness will go away. But sometimes the harshness is an indicator of other things. For instance, the way the unit is mounted on a hydraulic system, it could be the size of the lines, it could be the bends in the lines, it could be its mounting, it could be the pressure it operates at. For instance, if you have a pump that's starting to cavitate, it's going to make some noise. If the noise level is going to go up, its vibration is going to go up, and then you may start to produce a harsh sound. So it's really hard for me over a podcast like this to really explain to you the harshness, other than saying it's not a pleasant sound. So getting back to me listening to, you know, the engines at the truck stop, is that you could have an engine has a combustion event that's very smooth, that's very quiet, but it's what we would call a harsh combustion event. It's not a pleasant sound. Or you could have something that's actually has a higher decibel level, but its voice print is much more pleasant. So as in essence, let's say like chalk on a board or fingernails on a blackboard years ago, right? They used to make that screeching sound. That would be a harsh sound, something that you find offensive. But when you look and you listen, any one of those three, and I'm repeating myself because I want to drive this point home, is that use NVH as a qualifier when you're buying something. And use this also when you're buying a used piece of equipment, and no matter what it may be. Listen for NVH. You know, if there's a lot of harmonics going into that hydraulic pump that you could feel, well, it's not really noisy, but you feel a lot of harmonics. And empirically means that through experience, empirically, you know that the pump shouldn't feel that way. Well, that's probably a pretty good indication that it's in the early stages of cavitation, and or is in early stages of a bearing going wrong, or may have no vibration, and you say, man, that doesn't sound right, and that could be a harshness component. So apply that when you're buying a piece of equipment new or used. You're buying an engine, and you know, in the auto industry is a real stickler for this, but they also will trick you. And the farm machinery business has not gotten to that point yet, thank God. But what a company will do, and Lexus was actually probably one of the pioneers of this when they came out, I think in 1989 or 1990, is that they ended up, I don't know whether they probably didn't develop it, they probably found it and then just modified the formula to work for them, so don't take that as gospel. But what they used to do was insulate everything. And so they knew that at one particular point that you could not get the, excuse me, I had to hit the cough button. At one particular point, you could only decrease the noise of the engine or the transmission to a certain level. And all the magazines raved of the quietness of that car when it came out, the tomb-like quietness of the engine, the tomb-like quietness in the cabin, that you couldn't hear anything. And what they basically did, they loaded everything with sound deadening. So, like, the valve covers was loaded with sound deadening. It was an overhead cam motor, so traditionally, overhead cam motor has so many things going on in the top of the cylinder head that they have a more of a mechanical sound emanating from the cylinder than a push rod motor. They had a sound deadening on the intake manifold. They had a sound deadening in the transmission case. They had a lot of sound deadening in the vehicle. And they used this to basically, as an inexpensive way to actually decrease the NVH of the engine, of the whole car. And that's why if you look at a lot of equipment today and a lot of newer vehicles, especially high-end vehicles, they actually have fluid mounts. They have mounts would be akin to like a fluid-filled gauge on your pressure gauge on your sprayer, is that the fluid is in there to dampen the movements of the needle so the needle doesn't oscillate, and to every slight change in pressure from the pump and flow that it dampens it. And what they've basically done is that they've done this a lot in automobiles and in machinery, that they'll put actually a fluid mount in there. And so whether it's an engine mount, a trans mount, a hydraulic mount, and even more expensive higher end applications will actually control that mount electrically and control the amount of, I don't, I'm for simplistic sake, I'm going to go for a tangent, the way the fluid responds in it. And that's basically it. So what they'll do is that, and that'll be an end result of giving you a very smooth or quiet operation. And, you know, there is a plus side to that. It's not only a bunch of, you know, snake oil to make the consumer say, man, this combine is so quiet, or this whatever. There is a consumer component of it, because what people do associate quietness with quality. And but also the practical component is that if I can, let's say if I have a big pump on a big sprayer, right, a big sprayer, and I could eliminate or I can minimize some of the harmonics and quell some of the harmonics that would go into that pump, not only would I have a reduction in NVH, right, and I have higher consumer satisfaction for, man, this pump is so quiet. But whenever you put NVH into something, is that you're going to have a bearing and a shaft that's going to be absorbing that harmonics. And if you look at the front of any engine, that's called a harmonic dampener. A harmonic dampener is meant to absorb and to quell the harmonics, the vibration in the crankshaft. That is, aside to this, harmonic dampeners do wear out and they go bad, and they in a lot of big diesels, Cat, whatever, Cummins, Detroit diesel, they tell you after so many hours to replace that harmonic dampener, because they know its dampening ability, whether it be a fluid type of viscous fluid in there, or it may be some sort of rubber type of material. It's not truly a rubber material, that will age over time through thermal cycles and through use, and it will actually wear out, and it'll start to put more harmonics into the crankshaft. You're not going to feel that driving a semi down the road going to the grain elevator. But what will happen is that harmonic will be transferred into that engine crankshaft and into those bearings, those main bearings and ultimately the rod bearings, and will decrease the life of that motor. So whenever you could quell a harmonic, then you always are going to make the machine happier. And the thing is that, you know, in some instances, like I say, there is just a marketing side to it, which would be making the engine sound quieter, or the transmission, or what have you. And the other part of it, there is an engineering value to it, because if you could eliminate those harmonics, you're definitely going to make that component last longer, because you're not having that vibration coming to the bearing into all those parts. So let's say if you have a hydraulic pump, let's say you have a turbocharger, and that's what our special delivery section question is going to be about today. But you have a turbocharger, and this thing is spinning, and you have a lot of, it's not balanced properly, and you have a lot of harmonics in there. Then what's going to happen is you're taking some of that energy, and it's from that's going into the turbine wheel from the exhaust, and instead of building boost with it with the compressor, you're taking it and moving it up and down. And then that movement up and down, that loading and unloading and loading of unloading over time is definitely going to stress that bearing and stress that, not so much the shaft, but stress the bearing. And it's the bearing, instead of spinning in a cylindrical path, it's going to be spinning almost, and it's going to be forced into an ellipse. And it's going to be, granted, a very minor ellipse, but it's going to be moving up and down, and then eventually that turbocharger is going to go. So keep that in mind. To recap here, get used to listening and feeling different aspects of your machinery. Pay attention to any changes at NVH. If that engine was always very quiet, and diesel engine, gasoline engine, now it's starting to, the combustion sound becomes more harsh. It's not really noisy, it's harsher. It's a raspy voice like this, instead of like that, right? Then that's usually an indication of something happening. It's something like that's probably dirty injectors or carbon built up on the pistons or what have you. So it is an indicator, and it's something that I really want to emphasize for you to become familiar with. And, it's going to bring value to your operation, because it's going to be able to make you better informed purchasing decisions on newer used equipment identifying NVH. And it's also going to be a diagnostic tool for you, because most things will talk to you. You may not always be able to hear them. You, as I say, using the example of the alternator in a combine when you're sitting in the cab, but if you got used to listening to it or feeling it with your hand or what have you when the engine is running, not every day, but you have that opportunity to feel something, listen to it, look at it, right? And the thing is that you'll be able to tell ahead of time, and you'll be able to predict this failure. And the key to machinery is to be able to actually predict. First of all, you want to eliminate a failure. If something is going to fail, because it does wear out, things happen, you want it to fail before it has collateral damage to something else. And the collateral damage may not be to the machine. The collateral damage may be to your farm, because it broke when you couldn't get in the field and plant, and now you missed the optimum planting window and it's raining for the next 2 weeks. So that's big collateral damage, right? And you always want to try to take care of something under your timetable, not the machine's failure timetable. And I think that is probably the most important take-home message that I could give you through this show today, that pay attention to this, look, listen, feel, and acknowledge it. Don't just say, I saw the light come on, right? People say, and I kept going. It's talking to you for a reason. A good machine, a good friend, is a good friend when it's silent. Like you say with children, silence is golden. Well, with machinery, silence or its normal voice print is golden. So now we're going to go on to our special delivery section. And I am very proud to say that special delivery is brought to you each week by Firestone Ag. And that is a company that was founded by Harvey Firestone. He was a fourth generation farmer from Columbiana, Ohio. Mr. Firestone dreamed of putting rubber tires on farm tractors, and his innovative mindset is the core of Firestone Ag today. And, Harvey lives on in the 23 degree tread bar tire design, industry standard by far, the AD2 advanced technology IF and VF tires, and their new to the market Firestone replacement tracks, the Firestone of tracks. The soil is the lifeblood of your farm. Trust it only to Firestone. And not only should you trust it to Firestone, but keep in mind that those Firestone tires are made in Iowa, in the middle of farm country, in a 105-acre plant, and it employs over 1,200 people. So, hey, those 1,200 people got good-paying jobs, and they're going to buy our crops. So when it comes to tires, think of Firestone. So now, we have a quick note here, and it says, Hi, I had a turbocharger rebuilt a few months back on our grain truck, a Freightliner with a C13 cat. It just recently failed again. Oh boy, that's not pleasant. Any thoughts? The shop says it has an oiling issue. And this is Bob from Northwestern Kansas. Well, I'm sorry to hear about that, Bob. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you first of all, right now, you need to obviously get, well, if you use the truck for grain, you don't need to get it fixed now, but let's assume that you use it for other things and you need to get it fixed. Depending upon the length of time, it's very hard to do turbocharger forensics without seeing parts, and even when you see it, it's very hard because it's such a small unit in relative terms that when things go bad, it's like crashing into a telephone pole. Usually things crash in it. In other words, the bearing goes bad, the shaft breaks, or something happens, the turbine hits, the volute hits, the compressor hits the volute, or whatever. The volute is the snail-shaped housing of a turbocharger or a centrifugal type of pump that's called a volute, V-O-L-U-T-E. And the snail, like the scroll type housing. And it's very hard for you to determine that after the fact, but there are some telltale signs. The thing is that if the turbocharger lasted, you didn't say how long it lasted, you just said, I think you said a few months back, and then it failed again. So I don't know what you do with this truck. So I would need to know either hours or how long the turbocharger lasted before it failed again. If it was an oiling problem, I would say that it would fail relatively quickly when it's starved for oil. That's an oil feed issue. If it's a drain back issue from the turbocharger, then usually the seal would fail because the oil would be not being able to drain back. You'd probably coke up some of the oil, but you'd probably start to push oil through the seal on both the compressor and the turbine side, and get some exhaust smoke from it's coming from the, and well, both ways you get some exhaust smoke because you'd be pushing oil on either the right into the exhaust or through the actual engine and then burning it. So the thing is that I would have to probably say, and I have no basis for this whatsoever with the limited information that you're giving me, but I am going to be doing in a few weeks a podcast show on an idle chatter on turbocharger failure and not really maintenance, getting to know turbochargers a little bit better as far as what needs to be done when they're rebuilt. And I would have to honestly say there's probably a good chance that the shop that rebuilt the turbocharger did not balance it. And a lot of guys don't balance the turbocharger, and then what will happen in very short order, the bearing will fail due to, as I was just saying, noise, vibration, and harshness, and a lot of lateral movement and up and down movement. And then what will happen is that bearing will fail, and then there's a tight clearance between the volute and either the compressor wheel or the turbine wheel, and then it breaks a piece off or it collides and crashes. I doubt very much if it's an oiling problem. The forensic approach that you need to take is how long did the first one last, how long did this one last, and we need to do a little bit of exploratory. So when you listen to this, please feel free to contact me at hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com. And then give me some more information so I could hopefully help you and lead you in the right direction. And probably a good indicator of what was done on the rebuild was what was on your invoice. And you may want to query the person in the meantime. But as a Christian, I don't want to bear false witness. But usually a failure like that happens in short order after a rebuild is usually an assembly issue. And usually probably not even an assembly issue, more a balancing issue. So listen, thank you so much all for listening. You have a blessed day. And I hope next week we could talk about some stages of growth or whether we got any seed in the ground or not. But hey, whatever it is, it is. And I want you to know that the Hot Rod Farmer is pulling for you, the American farmer and rancher, and my beloved America. You have a great and safe week, and thanks so much for listening.